Mr. Stewart, Reel 5. Now, after the Manners was decommissioned and you left her, you went to the Royal Naval Barracks, Portsmouth.
Yeah,
well, you appear to have been there from sort of February through to April. Do you remember anything about that time?
I probably went home first for a couple of weeks, survivor's leave, right? And then after that, I would go back down to RNB and stayed there for a few weeks. Actually, they sent us out, we were in RNB for a few days, but they sent us out to Petersfield, which was one of the camps, you know, the overflow. Funny enough, that's where the captain lives now. He lives in Petersfield now. But anyway, we're out there for a few weeks. And one I always mind was a Saturday afternoon. I got a call over the loudspeaker, telegraph Stewart report to the drafting office. It was a Saturday afternoon because everyone was wrapped up. And so I went along to the drafting office, right, quick. You have 2 hours to get your kit packed or all the rest, and there'll be a van waiting here on you in 2 hours' time. So I had to dash back to my cabin, pack my gear, and get to the drafting office. It turned out that someone had fallen out of this draft, which was going to the Far East. So I was a replacement. They were all down in RNB, in the old RNB, by this time. So they loaded me into a little van and I went down to RMB and joined this party, which were going as well. I don't know if I knew at the time, but heading for the Far East anyway, you know. So we probably stayed in RMB for a day or so, and then after that we got on a train and it took us up to Liverpool. This was onto a trip ship, which was tying up alongside Liverpool. That was called
Reina del Pacifico.
Reina del Pacifico. That was the Reina del Pacifico. And saying that, I would say it was a bit of a hell ship.
well, tell me what conditions were like aboard
her. It wasn't very good, actually. Very, very poor.
In what way?
It was no, as far as I remember, no air conditioning. When we got further south, it was stifling hot. There was an awful lack of water. The water was only turned on an hour or two at a time, two or three times a day. Food was far from perfect. It wasn't a very nice ship to stay on, really, although we were stuck on it for a few weeks. Well, eventually they sailed from Liverpool. Not a very nice feeling, because that's we're going out where over the same spots where the Manners would lying. That was the only time I felt a bit uneasy. But after that, we sailed on no problem. We went down round about past Gibraltar and through the Med. We got to Suez Canal.
They left on April the 14th, so this was taking you through April into May.
Was it? Uh-huh. And we got to Suez after that. Is that correct? And
do you remember anything incidents on the voyage?
Sorry.
Do you remember any incidents on the voyage?
Very. Nothing. Like nothing with enemy or anything like that. No, I wouldn't say there were any unusual incidents like that, you know. We got to Suez, that was the first time I'd seen that, and sailed through. And then it got very, very hot. We got through the Red Sea. I think we stopped at the other end for a little while and then continued on. Eventually we went over the Indian Ocean and ended up in Ceylon, I think. Ceylon? I'm going to say it was Bombay, but no, we went to Ceylon. We must have been taken ashore in Ceylon.
Now, it was there that you heard about the end of the VE Day.
Oh, that's right.
What do you remember of that?
I just remember the fireworks and things. I'm sure there were fireworks in the harbour. We must have still been on the ship at that time. And a lot of improvised fireworks were fired off that night on the ship. But you have a feeling of unreality, I think, that, the war was over there, but what was going to happen out here, you see? So after that, I think we were put ashore, yes, we would be put ashore into barracks which were a wee bit outside the town. I can't remember the name of them.
HMS Maina.
Maina.
That was the name of the barracks, was it?
That's right, that was Barracks Maina. We stayed there for, I couldn't say how long now, actually. And then we got a draft, and the draft was to go to Bombay, I think, in Bombay. So we got on a train and we travelled a length of Ceylon from Colombo right up to the northern end where there was a port. And we crossed, I think it'd take a few hours across the water to India, the mainland. Then on a train again, and we travelled as far as Madras, I think. And when we got to Madras, I always laugh at that. We said, well, when was the next train to Bombay? Thinking it's like in this country, but instead of that, they said, oh, next train's 9 o'clock on Friday evening or something to that. So we had to go into a camp and stay at temporary accommodation in this camp until the Friday. And after that, we continued on the train. I think it took a good day and a half or something like that on the train to get up to Bombay. And from there we were put, first of all, I think the very first part was in the town in Bombay, in what we're calling our multi-storey flats. And then after that they moved us out to another camp outside the town.
And that camp was Chimba Camp.
Uh-huh. Well, we got
so
to
what happened at Chimba?
At Chimba Camp. Now, actually that was a Royal Marines camp. Chamber camp, but they must have needed an overflow, so there was only maybe about 100 RN people in this camp. So they were pretty rough, the Royal Marines, compared to what we were. Well, what had happened on the journey to that camp was we had a petty officer in charge. I think it was only about 8 of us, and on the journey from Ceylon to there, this petty officer was a New Zealander, an Australian, I think. He told us, oh, well, he hadn't been given any allowances for us. We have to pay our own way. So we had to buy our own food on the journey up, which was about 5 or 6 days. We had to buy all our own food when we were travelling up. But when we got there, fortunately, there was a petty officer, which I knew, in the camp. And I told him about this, what I'd done. He said, oh, you've got an allowance to keep you up. And then he came to us, the eight of us in this hut, and he says, look, that petty officer's asked for a draft, and he's leaving here tomorrow morning. And he was off before they could make inquiries about what had happened to the money that he'd been given to pay us our way up. So we reported that to the paymaster, and within a day or so, the PO was brought back to the camp. Anyway, the end result was we got court-martialed and we all had to appear, and they asked us how much money he had given us to buy for this and that. Next, well, we didn't get anything, you know. So, well, to cut a long story short, he was charged and he got the jail for it. That was him. So we didn't see him again. And then, before that, though, he was a chap who said we were going to join a beach party. And he said, oh, well, there's 8 of us, will be issued with radios and one thing or another, and we'll go on the beach and be in communications between the sea and the beach, which wasn't a very nice idea, but we more or less told him, well, if he was the first not to walk in front of us on the beach, he was that kind of bloke. We didn't like him very well, you know. So anyway, that was during that time, they sent us from there to a place, I think it was called Coconada.
You seem to have gone to Secunderabad. Yeah,
Coconada. It was just a little village that was on the way across India, on the east coast of India.
And what happened there?
Yeah, well, this was just a big exercise for invasion of malaria. Coconada itself was nothing, just a village, native village, but they were using it for a beach exercise, and they had lots of ships and things there, but our party, ourselves, we had to, we were already on the beach, and the communication between us and the ships while the invasion was going on. And that only lasted a day or two, and then we went back, I believe, to Bombay again after that. So it was really a long journey. I think it took about a day or two to get across there, and a day or two to get back on the train again. A long journey for only a short time. And I believe that was a time when we were on the train, when the train stopped suddenly along the road. And a big panic, and the engine driver, it was either an American or us, he spoke with an American accent, and he came along the train holding this little Indian bloke by the scruff of the neck, and he said, this, so and so and so and so. It was lying on the line in front of the train. So we handed him over to us, he wanted soldiers, he called her. So he handed him over to us, this bloke, who was doing his nut, this young lad always, you know. So anyway, we had to guard him while the train proceeded again on to some other station when they handed this lad over to the police. I think he had stolen money from his family or something like that. And that was too much for his conscience, so he was going to try and do away with himself. But we never heard any more about that, you know. But that was a bit of extra excitement. Was that. After that, after we got back to Bombay, we continued to be in this beach party, one thing or another. Then we, I thought it was my birthday, it was 21st birthday, when we got a draft.
Wasn't that after the war had ended?
No, well, that would be the European war, and when did I was the 12th, and the war ended on about the 14th, the Japanese war. Yeah, we didn't know that at the time. Yeah, so I got my 21st birthday, and I got a draft, and I think we went on to the Queen Emma, which was a smaller. The Prince Albert, which was a smaller troop ship. I think it had been originally a Dutch cross-channel ferry. And that took us back to Colombo, where we were to pick up a ship there. But the usual thing when we got to Colombo, today, the end of the war, was on the 15th, it was announced that the Japanese had...
Now, how did you feel about that?
Oh, great. Great. Oh, yes. We were eventually put on... the war was finished, but they decided... I'm going off a track here... Well, I'll just take it from my memory. Well, we got back to Colombo, and I believe, as usual, we had to join an LST, but the LST was in Bombay. So we had to make the trip away back to Bombay again to get on the LST. But the LST, we were just going to be passengers on the LST. There was eight of us, a group of telegraphers. We had to travel as passengers, because they carried a lot of troops on these ships as well. They could carry about 200 passengers. So we were actually going to Singapore.
And you went on landing ship tank 326.
Sorry?
You went on landing ship tank 326.
326, that's right, that was it. When we boarded the LST, we were just passengers, of course, along with a lot of troops. We were going to go to Singapore. So the captain announced that the invasion of Malaya was to continue as if it had happened while the war was on. They were still just continuing that to get the people over there, and they would hope that there wouldn't be any opposition. Now, while we were on the road to Malaya, we sailed in a huge convoy of all kind of landing ships and troop ships and so forth, like it would have been for a proper invasion. But while we were on the trip to there, I got a word to go up and see the captain of the LST, whose name I always thought was very apt. It was Captain Pilcher. Pilcher. Instead of Pilcher, it was Pilcher. Captain Pilcher. He was an ex-Merchant Navy officer. So anyway, they told me to go up and see Captain Pilcher. So when I got up to see Captain Pilcher, he says, "Look, you're a telegrapher." I said, "That's right." He said, "Well," comical too, he says, "I've got three telegraphers on board here at the moment." And he said, "I don't get on well with them. I don't know why I didn't go more or less, they didn't get on well with them, so I want rid of them." So he says, "How many? You've got about seven or eight telegraphers with your party down the stairs." I said, "That's right." Well, down below, I should say. "That's right." He said, "Well, I want you to go down and pick another two telegraphers, and that'll be three of you will stay on board here instead of going on to Singapore." And he said, "I'll arrange that the three of the fellas on here take your place on the draft and go to Singapore." And I said, "Well, I've never been in charge of anything. I haven't got the experience to do that sort of thing." "Oh," he said, "you'll be all right." So he said, "That'll be it anyway." So he says, "Can you let me know?" He says, "Go down and pick whoever you want yourself to stay on board with you." And he says, "That'll," and then come and tell me who it is, and that'll be it. So, oh, well, so anyway, I went down and I got a hold of all the lads downstairs, down below, I should say, and told them what it was. And I said, "Well, anybody fancy staying on board?" And I thought maybe wouldn't be very keen, rather go to Singapore. However, two lads, one was called Bill McKilwin, another was Cuddly Stainbutton. And they said, "Oh, I'll stay on board. No, I'd like to stay on board." But they were first there. This was the first ship they'd never been to sea before. So the two of them were quite keen to stay on board. But funny enough, Bill McKilwin was born in Edinburgh. I didn't know that at the time. He was born in Edinburgh, but he lived in Manchester. They'd moved there when he was very, very young. Another lad came from Scarborough. His father had a pub somewhere in the Scarborough area. So they were dead keen to stay on board. So anyway, I said, "Okay." So I went back up to the captain and told him that we would stay on board. And so from then on, we just changed over. The other three lads became passengers, and we took over the radio office.
You stayed on the LST 326.
So we stayed on, that was right. So actually, instead of going ashore, I stayed on 326.
Now, what were your duties, and can you describe the ship a bit and tell us what your duties were aboard it?
Oh, well, usual, just, the ship, of course, they're quite big, these LSTs, considering we probably have a crew of only about 50 people altogether. They're quite large, about maybe 300 feet long. I don't know, there'd be a couple of thousand ton. Of course, the front end, the doors were bow doors opened up. When you went to the beach, the bow doors opened up, and there was a ramp inside, just like a castle ramp. It would drop down, and people or vehicles would go in or out the ramp. Inside was a great big, like a garage. At one end, maybe towards the back end of the garage, was a lift, and this lift was used to vehicles were one at a time lifted up onto the main deck, which was open, of course, and the vehicles, usually lighter vehicles, lorries and vans, things like that, we lifted up and all packed onto the main deck. Whereas the lower deck would then be filled with the heavy vehicles like tanks and so forth and so on. So that's what we had when we went to Malaya, we had these on board. So we ended up...
But what about your duties as in charge of the wireless telegraphy?
Yeah, that's right. Well, put me in charge of the wireless.
Where was the wireless station?
The wireless was on the bridge structure again. At the back of the, of course, the ships, these LSTs were... the bridge and everything was away at the stern, near the stern of the ship. To leave all the front was all clear for carrying vehicles and so forth. So at the stern was the officer's quarters on the upper deck, the radio office up in the first deck behind the wheelhouse, and then up above that would be the open deck, the captain's bridge.
Now what was the wireless office like?
The wireless office was quite small, with a few radio sets, you know, receivers, probably about two, three receivers and a couple of transmitters and radio telephone. Plus we also had what they called SRE, that was a ship's radio entertainment.
What was that?
And that we had a pile of records. You could either put on the radio and send that through the ship, or else you could play records. We used to ask the crew for requests, and they could request this record, that record, whatever they like. So in the evening when there was nothing happening, we could play records to them. So in a way, we were really amongst the first disc jockeys, weren't we? We used to play records, but I had one of a pipe band, and I used to keep that, and I'd put that on and play, and that didn't go down very well at all, but I could hear the screams from the mess deck down below. So that was that. But anyway, we had good fun with the record player, and you could either talk to the crew or play records or play the radio. So that was that. But apart from that, we did watches, there were three of us, so we did three watches again. But the boys, of course, the other lads, didn't know about watches, how to work them, actually, how they would be, so I had to explain to them how we'd do the watches. But, oh, no, that was fine, that worked out good, you know. So there was always just one of us on, but we had to do everything ourselves. But if we had a problem, they had to send for me, and hopefully I had to try and sort it out.
But you didn't have any real trouble supervising the watch system. You didn't have any real trouble supervising the watch system?
No, not really, no. No, we all got along. Fortunately, the two lads were good lads, and we all got on all right together. We didn't really have any problem at all. We had another, again, on that ship. It had been the Americans that had that one. I think they handed it over after D-Day to the British. They had another emergency radio office away down on the port side of the ship, a long way from where the right officers. And we tried and tried and tried to get the radios working, but no, we never got these by the radios, so we never ever got them going. We got radio mechanics on board, and they couldn't get them going either, so we just ended up not bothering about that one, you know.
Now, where were you going? What happened? You were going to Port Swettenham.
Did we? As I say, after I took over the radio office and that, we continued on the voyage. And we ended up on the west coast of Malaya, somewhere in the Rangoon area, at a place called Port Swettenham. As an invasion would happen, but I don't know what would have happened if it had been resisted, because they ran us up right onto the beach, which was thick with trees. The beach was very narrow. It was, it looked as if it was only about 10 yards wide or something like that, and right into trees after that. Actually, I was on watch when this happened, and it was a terrific explosion. And I thought, oh my God, the war started again. However, it turned out that what we have engineers or that were blowing the trees down to make a road through this forest for the tanks and things to get off. So if they'd been resisted, I don't know what would have happened there, you know. So anyway, that we got that away, and we put so many ashore there, and all the local people, of course, were along watching us, you know. It was more an entertainment for them to see what was happening. I believe after that we went along with another load of the same shipload, but so many of them were put on Port Swettingham, and then we went to a place called Port Dickson.
So what happened at Port Dickson?
Port Dickson, well, we just put the troops ashore. The remainder of the people were carried from Bombay, put them ashore. And then after that, we left and we went round to Rangoon. And we went into, as far as I remember, into the river near Rangoon, or off Rangoon, and we anchored in the river. My memory to that was that they put on the showers on the ship, they switched the showers on the ship, which was, oh, that's great, we have a shower, but they didn't realise the water in the river was polluted. So personally, I ended up with running ears, and I had ringworm. And they blamed that from the waters of this river. However, we got over these things eventually. We did have a run ashore in Rangoon.
What do you remember of that?
Hmm?
What do you remember of that?
Yeah, when I called it the Rangoon River, but would that be the other body?
No, what do you remember of the run ashore?
Of the run ashore? Well, just that the place was badly damaged. I think we took a trip and went to see a pagoda, one of the churches, had a look at that and round about, but there wasn't much in the place. The place was still suffering from the effects of the war, so we didn't really do very much there at all, and that was that. After that, they told us that we're going to go to Bangkok. And so we sailed from there right round the coast of Malaya and past Singapore, of course. And we went, that must have taken us a few days to get to Bangkok. That's in Siam, of course, or
Thailand.
Thailand, that's it. Trying to get it nowadays, Thailand. Trying to get that saved there. So when we got up to Bangkok, the reason apparently was that the people in Singapore were starving, had no food, very, very short of food. So they discovered these LSTs would be ideal for carrying goods, used as cargo ships. So they'd sent us away around apparently Siam. Well, Siam had actually been a neutral on the side of the Japanese, so apparently they had plenty of food and rice. So they sent us away round to Bangkok to load up, and eventually we were going to carry it back. However, when we got to Bangkok, the river, Bangkok itself is about maybe 10 miles up the river. It's quite a narrow river, actually, maybe a couple of hundred yards wide. But when we got there to the mouth of the river, we couldn't get up the river because it was mined, it was still mined. So. Plus the fact it was very, very shallow, even the landing craft maybe only took about 6 feet of water. But it was very shallow.